You are listening to Angry Indian Radio, the podcast of the Aboriginal Press News Service.
Find us on the web, ang-newswire.blogspot.com.
You are listening to the Angry Indian Unintelligent Aboriginal Radio.
This is the Angry Indian. Welcome back to Intelligent Aboriginal Radio. You know, we've really been looking at what's been going on in women in media here for good reason. No one seems to give a damn about what's happening with women and media. So, you know, we talked to Jillian York on our last dispatch. Today we're going to speak to Liz Mariani. She's a poet. You might remember her from our Word is Bond episode. She was one of the people that contributed some of her words to that project. You know, I wanted to talk to her about what's going on, you know, in the internets. And, you know, why are we not really hearing the, not just now in this case, the perspective of women. Why are we not hearing from the souls of women? Which, again, as a Native American and as an African man, as a Gullah man, to not hear from women, man, it's like, you know, we're not hearing the whole story. You know, it's pretty obvious we're not hearing the whole story. And when we even look at ourselves in political terms here, we have another Secretary of State, you know, who's a female, and we have an ambassador to the United Nations that's a female, but, you know, are they thinking as women when they're being political? You know, one of the misconceptions that we have about women is that, well, all women are necessarily soft, and women do not necessarily want conflict, and women do not necessarily look at war. Historically, that's not the case. Margaret Thatcher was quite female, or is quite female, and she was quite willing to use her military to, you know, push the British agenda around the world. We have, you know, monarchs, female monarchs, you know, in Europe. The emperor that is given credit for uniting what we now know as China, he did this through his wife, who was the general of his armies. This is a story in history that is completely ignored. What we understand is the landmass, the borders of China today, were solidified by a woman. But of course the credit is given to her husband, but the general who solidified that militarily was a woman. Matter of fact, the most important pirate in all naval history was also Chinese, and was also a woman. She had the largest fleet, and she went all up and down India, Africa, you know, Eastern Europe. You know, these are stories that are not, you know, heard. The type of spirit that our sisters have is ignored. So we talked about journalism and media in terms of women. Today we're going to talk about the soul, and we're going to get into words, of course, because I'm speaking to a poet. And I want to welcome Liz Mariani. Welcome to Intelligent Aboriginal Radio.
Thank you very much.
So, yeah, we talked about a few things coming in here, and one of the issues that she wanted to discuss was the concept of whiteness. So, how does this concept of whiteness, which, you know, depending on how we look at it, if we take white people out of it, but does the concept itself of lighter skin and sharper features, you know, whiteness and purity, which is what that, you know, somewhat equates to, how does that deal with the feminine in the spiritual sense, in the esoteric sense? You know, I mean, let's really get into metaphysics, because I really think when you deal with women, you have to deal with mystery. Am I wrong in that?
When you deal with women, you have to deal with mystery.
I feel that way.
Yeah, I think there's an inherent sense of a constant and enigmatic shift in everything feminine and everything that is female. And I think that ultimately, when we think of the concept of whiteness as purity and the pressure put upon women in this world right now to emit some sort of unbreakable eloquence and state of being that isn't natural, as if they are plastic. Like, not plastic in the Hollywood sense, but the proposals that I hear from messages and media, and just how I feel women are generally being treated on the planet overall, sounds to me like women aren't human. They have us, the general society wants to be at an inhuman level of purity, much like kind of what whiteness implies, the opposite of. Whiteness implies almost kind of omnipresent innocence and omnipresent kind of purity and some sort of implication of property ownership and all a whole bunch of stuff, right? But when I think of whiteness and women and how they are described as mysterious, I think that that whiteness needs to be looked at as if it has an opalescent view. We need to look closer as to what's being put upon us and what we're sold. You know?
Yeah, I mean, I'm trying to get into this, you know, Pandora. How can I put this? The Pandora paradigm that, you know, all that is wrong, you know, has to, you know, be broken down to it's her fault. We hear this with Rick Santorum. We hear this with Mitt Romney to a lesser degree. We're definitely hearing this from Newt Gingrich. We're definitely hearing this from the Catholic Church. We're definitely hearing this from the evangelical Christian lobby. Rush Limbaugh, you know, as I was saying to you as we were prepping for this, as far as I'm concerned, this is a man who was afraid of women. And you know, this war that is going on with not just abortion, which we all know has a racial undertone to it, but birth control now.
Right.
You know, I mean, as a female blogger that's out here who has these conversations, you know, how does this, you know, how do you analyze this? Especially in terms of, you know, you have this election coming up and you have a president that really isn't saying very much about this.
Well, I think that it's important to look at the fact that the media is saturating itself in one subject matter. It is important to look at what they're also not discussing. And unfortunately, the full elections prior, maybe even the last, not so much the last big election, but I mean, routinely elections have distracting people with homophobia, biphobia, transphobia type of issues. And they're used as a distraction, but I feel like women are also being used as a distraction politically, even though they should be used as a distraction. Like, women's issues should be discussed, but not in this kind of packaged way where it's immediately thrust into the, you know, powerhouses of CNN and Fox News and all of these kind of diluted places. You know, I just think it's very interesting if this is happening right now.
Well, politically, the conservatives in the United States and even in Canada and the UK, you know, all throughout mm-hmm. the Anglophone world, they really right. do not have anything political to stand on. The economy has fallen primarily because of conservatism. No one is mentioning the policies of Bush in any of this. you know, no one is discussing this. You know, no one is discussing how the United States and Canada and so on and the UK got into Iraq and Afghanistan and how this has bled the country dry, while the capitalist interests have made record profits ever since all of this has started. But the people are being bled dry. You know, petroleum has gone up. You know, we're having a lot of social problems. You know, there's still a lot of work that needs to be done. And, you know, they really don't have anything political to hold against, you know, Barack Obama, you know, other than he's African, you know, other than he's a black man, and that he, you know, represents poorly the left wing of the United States political spectrum. They don't have anything else. So they have to start a culture conflict, because they can't go against him politically. He's doing everything, you know, that Bush was doing, and he's even furthered a lot of those projects. So they said they can't come down on him about this. So they have to be petty. So you start to pick on the people who are the least, you know, who are the most vulnerable. So you're looking at the minority populations, whether they're African, whether they're immigrant. And non-European immigrant, right? You know, because if you're coming in as an Afrikaner from South Africa or someone from Ireland, you're not going to get the same hassle as someone coming in from Venezuela or Nicaragua or what have you. You know, right. So you have the immigrants. You have African males that are just being hounded every day in this country. And again, the president says nothing about this.
Right.
You have women who, again, vulnerable, you know, to the abortion issue. Which, you know, just to be clear with our listeners here, the reason I say that the abortion issue is a racial issue is because it was actually said back in the 80s, we have to stop abortion because too many white women are getting abortions. You know, so if you want to believe the Ronald Reagan type of, you know, passive racism that, you know, Mexicans don't abort their pregnancies, and Africans don't abort their pregnancies, Filipinos have the kid, and black people go ahead and they have the child. Well, that's right, you know, to a degree. You know, I mean, that's kind of true, it kind of isn't true, you know. I mean, it has a lot to do with religion, you know. A lot of these people are also Catholic. I mean, you know, there's a lot of factors, there's a lot of coexisting dynamics. But the bottom line is, they do not like the fact that European women, the Eurosettler class, to be politically clear, is the main block that does make this decision. And, you know, again, it's not simply a race issue, it's also an issue of men not having control over women, not having control over the cycle of life. I mean, anytime somebody's going to actually go, you know, I mean, which is bad enough to say to any woman that, you know, I will tell you what to do with your body, especially the state. But to tell an individual, well, you know, you can't have sexual relations unless you're trying to procreate, so we're going to block birth control. You know, Margaret Sanger. Now, you know, I'm going to go on for a second here because I really want your response on this list. Margaret Sanger has been twisted, and now she was a bigot. She didn't like African people. That's clear. No one disputes that. Now, she is the founder of Planned Parenthood. Of course, that is clear. No one disputes that. But the far right has twisted this into Planned Parenthood has a plan to abort all black children. Now, I'm not sure if you're aware of that particular campaign of theirs, but they've been doing this across the country. And then, of course, they've been pulling a lot of African support behind this without explaining that when Margaret Sanger was talking about this, she was a eugenicist. And she was talking about aborting women who were alcoholics, women who had birth defects themselves, women who were married, you know, who were in mixed marriages, Native American women, you know, two entire generations of Native American women here were sterilized. The far right doesn't discuss this, but they make a propaganda point out of this to, you know, twist up the minds of both women and the African community. So, you know, as a blogger, again, you know, someone who's on the internet, what, you know, how do you define this you know, perhaps in a personal sense, you know, answering as a woman, how do you define this this type of propaganda and how they're taking advantage of this new medium?
It's an emotional appeal coming from a somewhat of a communications background. I've seen the tactics used by public relations firms, advertisers to get people, to grab people. And I think that for the far right to be misconstruing the history and Planned Parenthood, well, I mean, that's not nothing I can find surprising about that, but that it might be partially successful. All I can say is what we're being sold as women, I feel like we have to constantly be digest to see what it is that we're actually being fed. And I would encourage all of them just very closely at who it is feeding you information. Whether it's information about some sort of makeup that's going to reverse your aging. And I know probably, you know, many of the listeners are conscious of this sort of fake scientific stuff they throw out in those advertisements. Or whether it's, you know, advertisements that are constantly amplifying the heteronormative state that you have to marry if you're a woman. Like, you know, those types of things. But I think about the fact that sterilization isn't even discussed, and I think it should be part of what every mother teaches their child about life and the repercussions of power and the things that people can do with power. I'm under the impression that these conversations that women need to be having with each other, and when a big organization comes to a woman and says, this is the story and this is what we want you to believe, whether it's a place that you've always trusted or not, you have to go with your gut, you have to do with your research, and you have to talk to other women. On the street, face to face, eventually. You know, like, the internet is great and I'm very supportive of it, but there's something quite powerful and ethereal that happens when women actually physically connect. Even if it's the sister that you haven't seen in 5 or 6 months or 5 or 6 years on the street, to stop and check. It really, really helps kind of really know what the news is. Does that help?
Yeah, I think it does. You know, in the native community, we call it women handling women's business. Men are not allowed. You know, it's women's business. You know, we have a PSA, PSA targeted towards native women on their rights to healthcare, and you know. They make it clear that, you know, women's business is women's business. It doesn't involve men. So, you know, when I see what is happening in the political sphere right now, it's really confusing to me that more women are not standing up and saying, you know, I have a right to this. You know, the idea that there's so many females that are willing to go back to how things were instead of trying to make things better, and it's really amazing to me.
I think the silence speaks, and that I believe that there are a lot of women who disagree with what's going on, and just like a lot of systems where there is a patriarchal stronghold on society or the home, there are often women that disagree with what is going on in a home or in a community or what's being discussed, but they don't feel that they're prepared to deal with what might happen should they say something. It's almost like, and I can say this because I've there have been attempts on selling me this all my life. It's almost like we're being told, now don't speak up so that you actually appear totally, like, that you're not being submissive. Like, they don't say that, but they imply it. And don't do that because it's going to mess up the system. And the system depends upon the silence and the fear and the shame all interlocking together, all breaking down to the point of, you know, these concepts of Pandora's box and original sin and things that were totally fed to us. Many of us who come from these backgrounds are schools, you know, and it's, there's a lot of pressure to conform whether or not you agree or not. You know?
Yes, the invisible hand that slaps us all down. This is The Angry Indian. You are listening to Liz Mariani on Intelligent Aboriginal Radio. We're going to take a break so stations may identify themselves. This is Fourth World Radio for the Masses, Intelligent Aboriginal Radio. Please stay tuned.
This is Vagabond, producer, writer, and director, Machetero. You're listening to The Angry Indian on Intelligent Aboriginal Radio.
You are listening to Angry Indian Radio, the podcast of the Aboriginal Press News Service. AboriginalPress.blogspot.com.
I'm Dick Gregory with PETA. Martin Luther King Jr. taught me the fight against oppression is never an easy one. It's even harder if you have no voice. For animals held captive in circuses, life consists of cramped cages, shackles, and daily beatings. There is no escape. They cannot demand their freedom. Images like these bring only one word to my mind, slavery. Be an abolitionist for the animals. Please don't go to circuses. For more information, contact PETA.
757-622-PETA.
You're curious or confused? Get information or a pamphlet at most pharmacies or a health clinic. If you need help, see a doctor.
Hello, I am Susan Aglukkaq. The North has the highest incidence of sexually transmitted diseases, STDs, in the country. We also have a high rate of teenage pregnancies. High-risk behaviors, unprotected sex, lead to the spread of HIV/AIDS. It can be prevented. Learn the ways to protect yourself and others. Knowledge is power.
This is Tim Robbins. Recently in Washington, both Democrats and Republicans in high levels of government, the military, and intelligence have risked their careers, their livelihoods, and in some cases their safety to bring information to light to expose the lies, duplicity, and potential crimes of the Bush administration. These patriotic Americans are trying to tell us something. When Richard Nixon abused power, Congress held a serious bipartisan investigation that resulted in articles of impeachment. Ask your congressmember for an official investigation into the Bush administration.
Sponsored by AfterDowningStreet.org.
Hey, this is Ra Lamada.
And Donna from EPSI.
And you're listening to a
Creative Commons licensed podcast.
Word.
Only 28% of Americans believe in evolution.
62% want creation science taught along with evolution in our schools.
44% want creation science taught exclusively.
You are all about to learn that you didn't come from monkeys and slime. All of you were created in the image and likeness of God.
But didn't we evolve from prior organisms?
Yes, we did. Those organisms were named Adam and Eve.
Then why do we share 99% of our DNA with chimpanzees?
The Bible doesn't teach about chimpanzees.
What about redundant DNA and junk DNA? Does the Bible teach about that?
Well, I can tell you one thing. There's no redundant DNA in hell.
Our children are our future.
Let's try not to turn them into dangerous idiots.
Nothing British is a campaign against racism and extremism. Add your voice by signing our petition at www.nothingbritish.com.
Now that America has a black president, is this proof that racism is a thing of the past?
Well, I think white men were 100% of the people that wrote the Constitution, 100% of the people who signed the Declaration of Independence, 100% of the people who died at Gettysburg and Vicksburg, probably close to 100% of the people who died at Normandy. This has been a country built basically by white folks in this country who were 90% of the entire nation. I think they ought to do. They ought to defend the legitimate rights of white working class folks who are the victims of discrimination.
With white people showing love like this, who needs enemies? Intelligent Aboriginal Media. The anti-colonial cure for mental slavery.
Este es Aborigen Inteligente de Rato.
Internet Radio for Smart Aboriginals.
This is the Angry Indian. Welcome back to Intelligent Aboriginal Radio. This is the podcast of the Aboriginal Press News Service, and you can catch our RSS feed from our Feedburner feed with Fourth World Radio. We're here speaking with Liz Mariani. As I mentioned earlier, you might remember her. She was one of the contributing poets to our Word is Bond episode, which happened to be one of our most popular episodes throughout the 10-year run of this show. It just goes to show that there are a lot of people out there that do like poetry. There are people that read. There's a lot of people that read, and it could be because of the popularity that exploded because of Mos Def, which I actually understand he's changed his name to. I don't remember what he changed his name to. He's become an Orthodox Muslim. His promotion of the New Eurekan Poets Cafe over on the East Coast, slam, that sort of thing. You know, poetry now has become popular again. There's a lot of question, of course, and where this is going to go, because as usual, it's being commercialized, and when things are being commercialized, they tend to lose their spirit, they tend to lose their essence. As a female poet, how do you feel about that? The popularity of poetry these days, where is this leading for women? How much of this is being, not so much done by women, but how much of it is coming from the space of women?
Well, I can speak from my experience as one woman who's a poet right now. And I can tell you that I never trust anything that gets too popular or too big. It makes me nervous. because I can spiritually smell, the absence of authenticity. I think that it's important to remember that a lot of storytelling and support poetry is storytelling. And storytelling is essential for grounding yourself, whether you are traveling or you are be rooting yourself in a particular community. We live in a very transient world, especially within the United States. And for people such as myself that were born maybe after in the 70s, 80s, 90s, very transient. And I think it's important to remember that not everything should be pushed into a state of competitiveness. And that's one thing I don't enjoy about a lot of the slam culture, and that I kind of shy away from, is that maybe it's just important to listen. And times when you have the opportunity to listen, and maybe not worry so much about winning or being named number one or becoming the most popular, the most famous. Because I think when that becomes your focus, and if that is sold, what should be the goal of poets? I think that is it's not a good thing. It's suspect, as far as I'm concerned, to take something as spiritually reinvigorating as storytelling through poetry. And all you need really is a voice to do this, and a capacity to be brave enough to share it to yourself, or, you know, your family or community in some way. That does take a lot of bravery. And I think it's important to remember that, you know, it is good in essence to, in some ways, keep it as local as possible. Because when things get blown up, sometimes they get blown up out of proportion. You know? That's how I feel about it.
No, that makes sense. I mean, I've always felt that, poets almost walk around in the nude, because
yeah,
you know, they're really bearing themselves, and you can, I mean, as a writer, I feel that can be said about, you know, all writers, but with poets it's a little different, because, you know, they're not just looking deeper, they're really not, you know, stuck by the same constructs as the rest of us in terms of how to perceive what we define as being. And, you know, that's why it was really interesting that the episode that, the Dispatch that you were a part of, that was, you know, the most popular show out of this series. That there were that many people that were that interested in poetry.
Right. I think it's important to remember, and I try to remind myself to remember this, as a poet who also reads other poets and listens to poets, but also just opens herself up to media. And tries to open up himself to independent media, although I do eat bulk media just to see if it's being sold out there. But I think it's important to remember that language is very important. And many of us are, you know, and I'm one of those persons that feel that I've been forced to speak a language that doesn't exactly link in to my soul. Just speaking from part of my heritage as an Italian American, you know, there were signs up that don't speak the enemy's language when Italians were immigrating into the U.S. because we were at war with Italy. I mean, not that they just immigrated then, but, and, you know, I speak Italian. And when you lose your language and you're forced to speak a language, not exactly like this emotional, spiritual detour inside that you have to navigate, express what you want. And I feel like poetry for me is a way to take back English and remix it. Of course I want to learn Italian someday, or learn more of it. But what I'm trying to explain is that I realize what's done to me is violence. As far as having my language taken from me, even just being a third generation Italian American. And I realized that through remixing the English language in a way that I find selfishly, to make song out of it through poetry or whatever I want. It's my way of help and doing it in a way that can enchant, confuse, or even stall people that sold this to me, this language, that I don't feel totally linked up with. I see it as a weapon as well. Is that harsh?
No, I don't think so. I mean, until the 1970s, and I'm saying this because I remember, I saw this in my own eyes, until the 1970s, Italians were not white in the United States.
Right.
That took time. Right? I mean, if you said that your name was, you know, Tony Vincenti, it was like, oh, you're in the mafia, right?
People ask me that. I always say yes, because I let them sit with their fear.
You know, ideas that all stem from a concept of whiteness. Now, you wrote something recently you told me about. You have some thoughts about this.
About?
Yeah, you said you had some ideas that you jotted down.
Yeah, I think that I have a few ideas about what whiteness implies. And one of the things, obviously, that implies is innocence. You know, especially if you're considered a white man. It also, I feel, implies a history of property ownership. Also entitlement, obviously. And for Italians and other ethnic whites, as they call us, maybe people that are shifting and have been given that honorary badge or whatever, I think it's kind of like how people within the middle class work sometimes very hard to try to pretend like they are upper class, and they're just working so hard. There are people within ethnic white category that will do anything to identify with their oppressors, who are also considered white. Like the lovely sheriff of Arizona. And like Santorum, also an Italian American, find it very interesting how we've been sold that we have to align ourselves with people that stripped away our identity in the first place. It actually really bothers me also when I see that people take off hands of their names.
Well,
like, it seems like, to a puppet, it feels like a physical altercation when I see it. Like, I can see, like, oh, that's clearly an Italian name. Where are the vowels? Yeah. You know, it pisses me off. And I guess I'm at this point where I don't even, unless I feel like I have a connection with, let's say, somebody else who wants to discuss this within, like, the Italian-American community, I don't really... I can't even go there. Like, I'm thankful I have a younger sister that likes to discuss difficult things like this. But, like, there are people within my community and my family that are kind of on this don't ask, don't tell thing when it comes to entitlement and whiteness. And, you know, and they would not like how they were treated. They would be treated maybe here in Oregon. Like, I feel like different to be an Italian American in New York versus New York State versus other places in the country.
You know, they had to fight against that stereotype that they're not all gangsters, you know, that they weren't all involved in La Cosa Nostra. You know, well, when we look at Italy, for an example, which is still a fairly young country, you know, outside of all of the other European nations, as a bordered state, I suppose. But, you know, yeah. When we talk about multiculturalism and this question of whiteness, Italy is a very good question because there's so many different ethnicities have passed through Italy. And when I look at someone like Sophia Loren, who most people will say, okay, yeah, she's Italian, I see Arab in her.
Right.
I see the North African in her. And, you know, the same thing with the Greeks, who in their own traditions, their own, you know, when they teach their own children in school there, that they come from what we now know as Lebanon. So, you know, we have these links. So it's like when we talk about the white man of Europe, you know, what does that really mean? And as an Italian, what does that mean to you?
I don't even think, you know, I think that originally the concept of whiteness as we know it in an American English speaking sense was sold to us by the British. And the British went around calling anybody who wasn't British, you know, not white. Including the Scottish and Irish, you know.
That's true.
And it's kind of frustrating. I can't run around to family members and talk to them about this. I can't make these conversations happen. But I can bring them up through my poetry. I can't discuss with you. What I think is going on. I think that there's so much pressure on people to align and conform to whatever is dominant around them, including women, including people that were not always considered white and who are considered white now. There's so much pressure that it makes it so that our society is in such a fast pace that we can't even stop to think about what it is and who we are. We're just fooled by the pace of our lives. And that really keeps us from having these conversations, I think. I mean, Italy, I mean, every place. There are lots of places on Earth for people to pass through. You know, every single place on this planet people have to go to. There has never been a place where there has never been anybody else to go, you know, from one place to another. Like, people are always connecting.
Yeah, I mean, there's always a shock when I explain to people that, you know, if you look at and really do a study of what was going on in Germany in the 1930s, you'll realize that some of the propaganda was also anti-African. And a lot of folks don't realize that when the French, after World War I, were occupying Germany as one of the occupying powers, they imported Sudanese colonial troops who, like soldiers in most other conflicts, they, if they're stationed in a place long enough, they start to develop relationships with the local women. And there were quite a few, a sizable amount of half Sudanese, half German families. And children, offspring, running around Germany. And one of the propaganda points was, okay, you have the Jews taking over here, then you have the blacks taking over here, then you have the Turks coming in this way, and then you had the Rom, you know, the gypsy people coming in this way, that, you know, we're losing our culture, we're losing our character, we're losing our Germanness, we're losing our whiteness. And, you know, a lot of these people were emasculated. They were sterilized, and others, and there's photographic evidence of this, were sent to the camps.
Right.
And here you have Germany today, because I know German people today, who, you know, they come from Darmstadt, Bonn, you know, any of the larger cities or towns, and they're like, you know, you see a lot of different ethnicities. And the only people who seem to have a problem with this are the very, very old people who are not accustomed to it, not used to it. And the and I'm saying this because I've been told this by Germans, from the Eastern German population that has come over since the wall came down.
Right.
You know, which I kind of, you know, I told people this at the time that when the wall came down, that the Nazis, the neo-Nazis that were being suppressed by the Stasi or the state police in the East German Republic, that, you know, they were going to leak over to the West, and they were going to bring that kind of nonsense over to the West. And that seems to pretty much what's be happening in Europe. We see the far right moving ahead, just as it is in Canada, even though no one really wants to admit this, as it is in Mexico, even though no one wants to admit this, in the United States, nobody wants to admit that. Cameron, you have Le Pen in France, you also have his daughter in France, you have Mussolini's granddaughter in Italy, you have the Spanish fascisti, the Carlists even are trying to come back. You know, what is happening and how do women fit into this? And when you answer that, we have the Arab world where we have these, what was supposed to be the Arab Spring. What happened to women in the middle of this? What's going on with women right now in Syria, in Palestine, in Tunisia, in Egypt, in Libya? No one's even talking about what happened. We hear about what happened to the black male population in Libya, but we didn't hear anything what happened to the black female population in Libya when NATO went in and did what it did.
Well, in order to respond, I want to start first and respond to one of the things that you said about the Germans, and then I'll go into the other areas that you want to discuss, because I think it's important to note that there are people now who are descended from people who existed before that were of the mind to do anything to keep their access to resources, which is what's going on all over the world among the powerful. And that's part of what's going on in Germany, is that the people that were in control, thought they were in control, were losing power of their resources, access of them. And they had to take out people, they decided. They used the guise of ethnic purity and all that stuff, but they also knew that what we need to do. Like, it wasn't an accident, right? And when I think about women in the Arab world and how they're represented in the Arab Spring, or what we're receiving as media, because I'm not there. I've received invitations to go to Lebanon. I haven't gone. I have right now. But I mean, I'm not in the Arab world physically. I can tell you, very interested in hearing from the poets, from the children, from the women poets. I want to know what's going on, and I should make an active effort, actually, to read more blogs and more coming out of the Arab world right now among the women. I think that any revolution will ever be successful, whether it's a revolution of the mind or a shift in power or a total overhaul of the paradigm, will ever be successful unless it involves the emancipation of women and the creating of a state where women have active voices, are regularly consulted and included. And in a way included more based on what I consider, what I learned about an indigenous model or a Haudenosaunee model. I see it as a survival strategy. And I don't understand why people, when they're involved in these revolutionary times of their, in their existence and in their countries, don't go back far to see what worked and what was sustainable. As far as how they were able to create place and community, you know, and it's just not, you know, it's not sustainable to erase women from the formula. It's actually destructive.
Yeah, it is destructive because, again, you know, it's breaking the circle, it's breaking the balance. You know, it's not dealing with the idea of, okay, well, you know, there's a natural flow to how things could or should probably go. Instead, we're going to try to fix it into a box. And this is why I mentioned, you know, the women that are in politics now, the height of political power that women have attained in the United States, in the UK, in Australia, when you look at Julia Gillard, in New Zealand, throughout the Anglophone world, you know, with that ascendance to a seat at the table, so to speak, you know, where is the consciousness that will go, that you would think will go into, you know, correcting so many of these imbalances?
Where is the consciousness? I'm wondering if there actually is a consciousness, and maybe it's just not making it out of the places that it's being discussed because it's seen as something that is out of place or something. I don't really understand because I don't see these. When I've met Egyptian men and women, Lebanon and Yemen and Morocco and all of the places that I've had the pleasure of having face-to-face conversations with women from the Arab world, I'm really confused as to, based on my conversations, why I'm not here anymore. Because I'm always the one who's learning and blown away about these communities that are formed and the strategies that are active to keep people healthy in body, mind, and soul and connected. And maybe it's also that women are involved, but they don't have their ego attached to having their name attached. Maybe we're hearing from them, but it's not necessarily connected to their name. Maybe we are hearing their voices and we don't know.
Well, what would you recommend for change in terms of increasing or encouraging other women? Because I don't feel that it's a matter of a policy change that will really make a difference. You know, how can women inspire other women across the spectrums, be they ethnic, cultural, national, religious, sexual orientation? You know, how can women inspire each other to do what would be, in a very generalized and maybe in a way, because I'm a male, a paternalistic view, that, you know, the natural nurturing aspects that we identify as the feminine, be it the feminine mystique or the feminine element or the feminine dynamic, you know, how can that come across to really connect women across the board to where, you know, they can sort of work around these barriers that have been traditionally put up to keep women out of the political, social, and economic discourse, as well as power?
Well, I think that there's a couple things that I kind of always have set up in me when I have a chance to listen and learn from another woman, whatever age, and whether they are a personal relative of mine or not. I always try to omit my example, and if I have a chance to just say it, I will. But if you're a woman listening right now, what I want to say to you is that, of course, you probably know this since you're listening to this conscious radio show, but you are more powerful than you can even imagine. So I try to show by example that I am powerful, and also that we've been told, even though we might think we're not told this, but we are told in a lot of ways that our place in so many ways is so in the home. Sometimes we're being told that, even though this is not the 1950s in America. When we go out there and we speak, and this isn't just America, this is the world, but I mean, when we go out there and we speak, I think sometimes our voices are victims of erasure and constant criticism and being misconstrued, and then, you know, when they fall into the minds of people like Rush Limbaugh, horrible things happen. But we're not demure. There's nothing demure or about being a woman. And there's no place in the world that isn't your home. So this planet is your home. And we have, not only are we powerful, but we have a huge responsibility to not only speak, but act up. And I think that there are plenty of ways to do that. But it starts by really listening to, really honoring the fact that a lot of us, whether it's perceived that we're living comfortable lives or not, we're struggling constantly. A lot of us are engaging in challenges every day to keep hold of our minds and our hearts and our spirits. So this isn't something that any one woman is experiencing. I guess that's what I've been communicating. So I'm very much frustrated by how much I feel like I have to restate my humanity, my personhood, even in my own world, constantly. I can't imagine what it would be like without the amount of privilege that I know that I benefit from already. Do you know what I mean?
Well, yeah. I understand in terms of having empathy. You know, I'm not a woman, and I'm not white, and I'm not Italian, so I can only go... You know, I mean, honestly, I can only go by what you're telling me, you know. But as someone who has lived as an Uncle Tom most of his life, I mean, anyone who listens to this show, especially if they're from the African community in the United States, you know full goddamn well that I might have come out of the hood, but I've spent most of my time with white people. And, you know, when you're in like that, eating with them, literally living with them, going through their issues, you know, going through, you know, things with them, and you're kind of there, you're kind of not there, like a fly amongst the buttermilk, you know, you're there but you're not there. So, you know, I can relate in that sense. And one of the things that, you know, I like about your work and like about your attitude, you know, and how you express yourself online is that, you know, your experience is your experience, my experience is my experience. We can relate to each other, but there is no pressure that I have to, oh, I know exactly where you're coming from. I have to admit, as a male, I can tell you what I think women are going through, but I would be totally out of line to say I know exactly what women are suffering, because I don't. And this is why I'm offended, again, as an indigenous male, as a Gullah man, why I'm insulted by these pundits and whoever it was, these politicians, to make this decision about birth control, about abortion. How dare you? How dare you feel that you have the right to tell another living thing, especially your better goddamn half? You know, how do you, they're supposed to deal with their bodies? It is not our place. That is women's business. Now, if it was a panel of women, even if they were conservative, knuckle-dragging, Bible-thumping, by the book, I will do whatever the current Pope tells me to do, a group of chicks, you know, that's fine. I will disagree, you dig? But, you know, they're women. They have a right to make that kind of decision, you know. We can get into the right that they may have in socio-political terms and by class issues and economic strata and blah, blah, blah. But the bottom line is, men do not have a right to make these sorts of decisions about how women deal with their bodies. You do not have a right. It diminishes not just women, it diminishes men. Because when you limit women, you limit yourself, man. You know, if I told my wife that she couldn't do this, that, what have you, it's not... You know, keeping her in line, it's not keeping her in check. It's limiting me. Well, you know, every time that she limits herself, that she stops herself from learning anything, it limits what her and I can do together as a unit. So, you punk-ass sons of bitches out there who, you know, don't like women, you know, can't stand women having their own mind, can't stand women having an opinion, can't stand her maybe correcting you in public, can't stand her making more money than you, can't stand her knowing more than you, either step up your game or, you know, shut up. Because I really get tired of this type of testosterone-fueled nonsense. It's not only that it's not going anywhere, and it's not only that it's stupid. You're holding back the people. You know, when African and Native men act like this, it disgusts me, because you're holding back the people. You're holding back the people. You're holding back, you know, what progress we could be making. Because, you know, the more educated our women become, the more educated we become. Because that transfers to us. You dig what I'm saying? And it transfers to the children. You dig what I'm saying? Because she educates them. You know, I really have a problem with men who have a problem with women. Goddamn.
I have a problem with with all men than have a problem with women. But I can completely understand your perspective. I can definitely tell you that I find it so upsetting that it's crossed over to the point where I find it amusing, and that it doesn't make it light. The capacity of a woman is a creative process. People forget that when it doesn't just, obviously it doesn't just affect women, it affects the whole family and the whole community, and basically it's just like, it's like burning a forest down and then acting surprised when the wind is too strong when you're walking down that road. Or where the trees are. It's like, oh, why is the wind so hard? Like, there's no trees there anymore. When women are empowered and know their power and speak their mind amongst each other, and within their families and within their communities and workspaces and art spaces and everywhere that male supremacy can reign, and specifically also the white male supremacy, if women that speak up against that are making room for other people, not just women, but for lots of people. And I don't understand why women who feel like they're conforming and that, like, they're doing that to stay safe within their group or within their social or economic class, I don't understand why they don't understand how much they are determining their own destruction. It's like being, it's just like, I don't really understand it. It really, just how you don't understand men that dislike women and manifest that in so many ways. They're like active misogynists. I don't understand women who volunteer for their own destruction. But at the same time, I still try to make time to listen. Because maybe if I listen to somebody who I might think is, wow, she just puts up with so much shit, that's what I'll think. Maybe somewhere in that conversation of me, maybe somewhere listening, I'll hear just a smidgen of, you know, maybe I'm going to think about this in a different way, or do this in a different way, or maybe it doesn't have to be like this. You know, I wonder what century we're in sometimes. Like, I call this medieval America, because it's just really a trip for me. When I see the stuff on the news about all of these, I don't know, like camera, it's not camera crews going up in women, but that's some sort of like, those scopes where they want to, like, see the fetus or something before you have an abortion or something. Mm. I have no idea. I don't understand. People are.
It's control.
And who raised these men? Men treat women this way.
You were exactly right when you said medieval. You know, that's how desperate they are to regain some sort of psychological edge. They have to have some kind of control. It's the same thing with, you know, so many American men. And not just Caucasian American men. Quite a few African men have done this as well. The overseas friends group, mail order brides, whatever you want to call them, these Asian and Russian women for these lonely men in the West. You know, and when you ask them, when you really read the literature, well, you know, American women, it's hard to get along with them. You know, American women ask too many questions. American women don't let you be a man. So they go to these places like Romania and the Philippines and Uzbekistan, where these women want to get out of this situation because they're living in poverty. And they take advantage of this. You know, and then we had the sex trade that goes on in the Buddhist country of Thailand. And, you know, throughout all of these poor communities across the world, you know. And we're still asking, you know, why women are not being asked, what do you think about this?
And what's your solution?
And what's your solution?
That's the other point.
Respecting,
we can come up with a solution. Mm. If you're racing us, it's going to take longer to figure out what to do. You know?
Yeah, I feel you exactly, and that's a good, you know, that's some homework for our listeners. You know, what are the solutions? You know, let's not just talk about it and complain. But what are the solutions? How are we going to work around all of this? Liz Mariani, you've been a lovely guest. Thank you so much for being on.
Thank you so much. I'm honored to be on your show.
Thank you very much, and we hope to hear from you soon. I really want everybody to check her out, the Liz Mariani, on Twitter. Check her out in the Twitterverse, see what she has to say, and look at the various links, and read her work. Read her work. This is The Angry Indian. You've been listening to Intelligent Aboriginal Radio, and we just want to give some brain candy for our sisters out there that it is possible to change the paradigm. I believe that you have the power to do so. Special thanks to Liz Mariani for being on Intelligent Aboriginal Radio. And that's it, everybody. Peace, love, and solidarity. I hope you all have learned something, because I know I certainly did. This is The Angry Indian. Sig it.
I am not the candidate of Black America, although I am black and proud. I am not the candidate of the women's movement of this country, although I am a woman, and I'm equally proud of that. I am not the candidate of any political bosses or fat cats or special interests. I stand here now without endorsement from many big name politicians or celebrities or any other kind of prop. I do not intend to offer to you the tired and glib cliches which for too long have been a accepted part of our political life. I am the candidate of the people of America. Fellow Americans, we have looked in vain to the Nixon administration for the courage, the spirit, the character, and the words to lift us, to bring out the best in us, to rekindle in each of us our faith in the American dream. Yet all that we have received in return is just another smooth exercise in political manipulation, deceit and deception, callousness and indifference to our individual problems, and the disgusting playing of divisive politics, pitting the young against the old, labor against management, North against South, Black against white.
Listen to Angry Indian Radio. He is not only for Indians, but he is also for blacks and other minorities. And they have done a lot on the problems in Palestine and also the problems of blacks. And so I recommend that you listen to him.
Hello, I'm Carol Gordon. Traditionally, healthcare, including reproductive health, was women's business and respected as such. Reclaim your healthcare choices by keeping yourself informed and sharing information with your relatives. Inform yourself about Plan B, known as the morning after pill. Plan B will protect you from becoming pregnant after a sexual assault or unprotected sex if taken within 72 hours. Make sure your local Indian Health Service facility carries Plan B. It does not require a prescription and should be provided upon request. It's your right. For more information, call your local healthcare facility. This message is brought to you by Native American Women's Health Education Resource Center. We'll be right back.
This is DJ Fusion of the Fuse Box Radio Broadcast and BlackRadiosBack.com, and you're now listening to Intelligent Aboriginal Radio, another slice of real black radio for the masses. All right, peace.
AngryIndianRadio.blogspot.com.